Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer signed an executive order this month requiring healthcare workers undergo implicit bias training to obtain or renew their medical licenses. Over the years, we've been learning how implicit bias targets Black people at all levels of society, from healthcare to schools and policing. And it doesn't matter the race of a person, we all carry the biases of the society in which we live. Joining us is Jennifer Eberhardt. She's a Stanford psychologist who has done a multi-year exploration of policing in America. Her research found the association between Black Americans and crime is so powerful that just thinking about violent crime can lead people to focus their attention on Black faces. Jennifer Eberhardt, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So Jennifer, playwright and TV writer Cynthia Franks wrote a story recently about how she, as a white woman living in rural Michigan, had been pulled over 5 times by police. She believes they mistook her large Black poodle for a Black man. And since her Black poodle died, she says she's not been pulled over once. Now, this sounds so ridiculous, but you say in your recent TED Talk this month that this is exactly how bias works. You even shared a story about your own son on an airplane.
Well, when my son was just 5 years old, we were on an airplane together. He was excited about being on the plane, and he's looking around and checking people out, checking everything out, and he sees a man, and he says, "Hey, that man looks like Daddy." And I look at the man, and I realize he was the only Black man on the plane. And so I'm all set to have a talk with my son about how not all Black people look alike. But before I could, my son looks at me and he says, "You know, I hope that man doesn't rob the plane." And so I was just shocked at this. You know, he's 5 years old, and already he has, absorbed this association between Blackness and criminality.
Mm-hmm. I find this so fascinating because even in our profession, in journalism, we will report details of a police-involved shooting and add the detail that lists the race of the person. For instance, like a white officer, a Black officer. But what I'm hearing is that we carry the biases of the environment which we are part of. So for police, they can hold these biases of law enforcement at large.
Yes, they can. So let me give you an example. I met an officer once in a police department in a large urban area, and he had moved to the U.S. from Germany. Now, this officer had not, thought much about race before he got here, but just after a few years of being a cop, this had altered his way of thinking. And when he was on patrol, Black men would draw his attention. He would look for their hands, and he would look at how they moved their bodies, and he was ready to see threats even when none existed. So this is an example of how easily biases can form from, the environment. So if we want to change our biases, we have to work to change the environment that is producing it.
Can you take on something else, though? I'm thinking about how reporting on disparity works, because oftentimes, though, when people hear over and over that there is a disparity, that perhaps more Black people are targeted by police, they believe that inherently there must be something that Black people are doing to be the focus of police. That what you're finding is, all things being equal, there is a targeting of Black people. I guess I'm saying it and you're not saying it, Dr. Eberhardt.
But I
want to speak to this because right now we are at a moment where we are having discussions about disparities across the board in our society. And there's so many numbers that are coming up, but we're not talking about in the context of all things being equal.
Right. So if you look at when police departments collect data on stops and searches and arrests and so forth, and you run the numbers, and what we find is, over and above the crime rate, that you still have this disparity, or you still have this overrepresentation of Black people in terms of their stops and searches and so forth. So that's what we typically think about as bias. That's the thing that we want to address.
Mm-hmm. We saw what happened to George Floyd because it was recorded on a cell phone. But you say there are tools being used right now that we can analyze. With a team at Stanford, you've begun to use machine learning techniques to analyze large number of police encounters. What have you begun to find?
Yeah, so in Oakland, California, we have begun to look at body-worn camera footage, and we started with traffic stops. So we took nearly 1,000 traffic stops, and we were interested in looking at how officers spoke to Black versus white drivers during those stops. And we found that even when officers were behaving professionally, they spoke to Black drivers with less respect than white drivers.
Mm-hmm. You work with several police agencies. Have you been able to share the data with them so far? And what has been the response?
Well, yes. And so in Oakland, when we shared this data, they invited us to, help them to develop a training module around the traffic stop, where we gave them the takeaways of our study. And what we're doing now is looking at, footage of officers before that training and after that training to see if the training actually made a difference to real interactions on the street.
Hmm. Your research gives us the data that we need to make these informed decisions, but there is pushback that there's not much scientific evidence out there that shows implicit bias training works. What do you say to that?
Well, I agree with that. I think that we not only, when departments decide that they are going to, offer these trainings, that we should evaluate them. And for the most part, they are not being evaluated. So we need a lot more information about this, especially when it comes to, these implicit bias trainings.
In your talk, you talk quite a bit about the value of slowing down. You gave the example of prompts in the app Nextdoor, which uses a way to get people to be specific in reporting unusual activity, that it's not enough to say, I see a Black man.
Right.
Say more about the value of friction, as you call it, as a way to combat bias.
Yeah, well, so bias actually is more likely to get triggered in situations where we have to think quickly. In Oakland, in California, the police department changed the foot pursuit policy. It used to be the case that officers could chase a suspect on foot wherever that suspect went. And so if they lost sight of them, they could keep pursuing them. But then the department changed the foot pursuit policy so that if the officer lost sight of a suspect, they could not continue to follow them. They had to step back and set up a perimeter. If we shift a policy, there's a way in which we can decrease bias and have better outcomes.
Is this your advice as we look at all different sectors of society, the first step to take? What would you recommend to institutions as we all are now rethinking and assessing culture within organizations?
Well, I think that people don't always understand that systemic bias can feed personal bias. And so this is why simply screening people out who are biased during the hiring process won't work as effectively, as people might think it would. Despite our goals and desires, the systems that we work in can begin to change who we are and how we behave. And so it takes real vigilance. It takes real effort to prevent that from happening.
Hmm. That's an even larger problem to take on, like an entire organization rethinking its system. I guess my question to you is then, as individuals within organizations are rethinking culture and how to shape culture, how do they take on something so large like the system? Say if it's a company or organization rethinking and taking this moment to take stock.
They can look at, the outcomes that are not desirable. So to the extent that they see racial disparities in hiring or promotions or in the C-suite or wherever it is, that they can, examine, when those disparities come up and how, and sort of what are some approaches they could use to address it. Just changing certain aspects of that environment can sort of change the mindset of people who are in that environment. It can, change the probability that those people will act on bias, where bias will influence their decision making and so forth.
Hmm. That's Jennifer Eberhardt, psychologist at Stanford University and author of Biased, Uncovering the Hidden Prejudice That Shapes What We See, Think, and Do. Thank you so much for this.
Oh, thank you.